On July 28th, President Donald Trump traveled to Long Island to make a speech.
Thank you very much. This is certainly being home for me.
The theme of this speech was law enforcement.
We love our police. We love our sheriffs. And we love our ICE officers.
But specifically, about enforcement focused on one particular group.
We're going to destroy the vile criminal cartel, MS-13, and many other gangs. But MS-13 is particularly violent. They don't like shooting people because it's too quick. It's too fast. I was reading one of these animals was caught and explaining they like to knife them and cut them and let them die slowly because that way it's more painful and they enjoy watching that much more. These are animals.
Trump chose Suffolk County on Long Island, New York, as the location for his speech because the area has been directly affected by MS-13. Suffolk Police Commissioner Tim Sini says that out of the 45 homicides over the past year and a half, 17 are believed to have been committed by the gang. Trump's speech connected two of the issues he's been very vocal about, law and order and immigration.
Mr. Attorney General, how can the United States prevent MS-13 gang members from going north into the U.S.?
Well, we need the wall, and we need better enforcement at the border.
Now, a lot of people in the U.S. are probably hearing about MS-13 for the first time in the last few weeks. But here at Latino USA, this isn't a new topic. We've been reporting on the gang for years, and today, we're going to bring you some of that work. Coming up, we're going to hear about the extortion business that powers the gang in Central America. And we'll hear about a grisly string of murders of immigrant youth on Long Island. We're also going to hear from former gang members about their experiences and what they thought about Trump's speech. With all of this on today's show, we want to help answer this question. What is MS-13, really? So, first up, the origins of the gang. Estimates say that there are about 70,000 members throughout Central America, and in the U.S., about 10,000. Now, that might sound like a lot of people, but it's actually a pretty tiny percentage of the estimated total of 1.4 million gang members in our country. Nonetheless, MS-13 is still a serious problem in certain areas of the United States. And initially, you might think that those gang members in the U.S. are here because they came from El Salvador or Honduras. But the answer is much more complicated because the birthplace of MS-13 is a lot closer to home. Latino USA producer Marlon Bishop picks up this story.
If you've heard anything about the Mara Salvatrucha, it probably went something like this.
It's the most violent gang in America. It has 10,000 foot soldiers in the U.S.
The crimes were the handiwork of one of the deadliest gangs in the world, Mara Salvatrucha, known as MS-13.
These clips from TV documentaries may be sensationalist, but you get the gist. Mara Salvatrucha, better known as MS-13, has earned a reputation as one of the most violent gangs anywhere. But long before MS-13 was an international super gang, it began as a group of young immigrants in Los Angeles, California, made up of guys like Alex.
My name is Alex Sanchez. I'm an immigrant from El Salvador. I came here as a child in 1979, just before the war started. I got in trouble with my issues of the clash of culture I was confronted with, and I ultimately joined the gang.
That gang was MS-13. Alex has since left and now leads a nonprofit called Homies Unidos, which means Homies United. They help rehabilitate former gang members. Few people managed to get out of MS-13 as Alex did, but the way he got in is typical. His parents immigrated to the U.S. in the mid-70s. They left Alex and his little brother with relatives in El Salvador when they were very young. A smuggler was hired later to bring the kids to California. Alex was 7 years old and only knew his mother from a black and white photo he carried with him on the journey.
We were traded in downtown L.A. The Coyotes gave us to our parents, and our parents gave the money. So we're sitting in the truck looking at these two complete strangers that now we had to call mom and dad. So it was really difficult. The transition of the separation of my parents was really difficult to kind of mend. And in some ways, we never did.
Alex's family lived near the Pico Union neighborhood, where most Salvadoran immigrants in the city settled.
The most difficult thing was transitioning into the mainstream culture, which was predominantly Mexican or Chicano, and we suffered a lot of persecution because of our differences in the way we spoke Spanish, the fact that we were immigrants from Central America, and we suffered a lot of bullying in school, in the community.
Soon, Alex started spending time with a group of Salvadoran kids that weren't ashamed to be from Central America. Kids who stood up to the bullying. They were members of MS-13, a new gang formed in imitation of the Mexican and African American gangs that had long been a fixture in L.A.
It didn't take too long for me to actually really start liking the fact that this group provided some of my needs that I had, you know, the sense of belonging, the sense of protection, the sense of being taken into account.
Alex was jumped into the gang at age 14 and soon left home to live with members of his new so-called family. He started drinking, doing drugs, and eventually committing crimes.
You know, eventually you get arrested and whatnot, and I ended up getting arrested for assault, and I ended up in juvenile hall.
Time spent at juvenile hall only hardened Alex's instincts and led him on the path to prison. Then, in 1994, Alex was deported back to El Salvador. He wasn't alone. In the early 90s, the LAPD began collaborating with the Immigration and Naturalization Service to deport immigrants convicted of aggravated felonies. A 1996 federal law made it even easier for judges to deport gang members. This law especially affected MS-13, since so many members were undocumented. Between 2000 and 2004 alone, an estimated 20,000 Central American criminals were deported back to their home countries. Alex Sanchez says he had hoped that going back to El Salvador would be a fresh start, a chance to leave the gang life.
But all of that went out the window as soon as I got out of the airport. As I was going towards the terminal, I saw a boulder out of a hillside with the letters of the MS-13. As we kept on that road, there was a big wall, and it had the Roman numerals XV111. And that's when I realized that the rivals were there too.
XV111 was the symbol for the 18th Street Gang, MS-13's sworn enemy from Los Angeles. Through the mass deportations, both gangs gained a presence in Central America. Their turf wars came with them. By the early 2000s in El Salvador, the growing gang menace became a hot political issue. The government started a get tough on crime policy called the mano dura, or tough hand.
The effects of these policies have been very bad.
Jose Miguel Cruz is an expert on Salvadoran gangs at Florida International University. He says the basic principle of mano dura was to get gang members off the street and into prisons. The government passed an anti-gang law that allowed police to arrest people who simply appeared to belong to a gang, whether or not they committed a crime based on tattoos or style of dress.
They just locked them up and left them there. Being there 24/7, gang members basically have all the time to organize that allowed them to grow as a criminal organization, something that they weren't at the beginning.
The plan backfired. Swollen with criminals, the prisons became finishing schools for gang members. Jose says that if the U.S. policy of deportation gave gangs a toehold in Central America, mano dura made them thrive. Just look at the numbers.
Before the mano dura, gangs were responsible more or less of 7% of all homicides in El Salvador. After the mano dura, gangs were responsible almost 45% of homicides in El Salvador.
Meanwhile, the government gave tacit approval to armed vigilante groups. The most notorious of these was La Sombra Negra, the Black Shadow, whose death squads executed people they suspected of gang membership. A 2010 UN report declared that the mano dura approach was a failure.
There has not been a sense of investment on our youth, but a sense of repression. It's not stopping the problem because they're not hitting the root cause of them.
Alex Sanchez says that mass poverty and the lack of opportunities for young people in El Salvador are the reasons why they get involved with gangs in the first place.
To see a 12-year-old kid who's been abused for so long, abandoned and mistreated, to all of a sudden, you know, just put on a tattoo and be empowered and feared, the level these kids were feared was too empowering.
In the mid-90s, Alex decided to return to California. He says he had been targeted by the Sombra Negra death squads and needed to flee. Once back in the States, he made the decision to renounce his gang membership. He began the painful process of getting his tattoos removed and started doing gang intervention work. As a side note, Alex was arrested in 2009 and accused of secretly continuing to be active in the gang. The government eventually dropped the charges, admitting that their case was, quote, flawed. In the summer of 2014, there was a major spike in the number of child migrants coming from Central America because of gang violence. At the time, President Obama took action to both deter migrants and increase the number of refugees accepted, with a special program for processing refugee applications from Central American kids. President Trump, however, has stopped that program. Because of the new administration's attitude towards refugees, reports say Central Americans are increasingly scared of entering the U.S., and now often are opting to just stay in Mexico, where relief isn't likely either. For Alex, these Central American kids remind him of his own story. Different era, but the same problems.
That's where it all starts. I mean, the fact that they're seeking refuge and they are giving refugee status here does not mean that they're going to be happy and rejoice once they see their families. You know, these kids are going to be troubled. These kids are already at risk. You know, many of these kids are going to go live in poor areas where there's drug addiction, where there's violence, where there's crime, where there's inadequate housing, where there's gangs, you know, and these children could fall prey to any of those things.
It's the same story that Alex lived, a cycle of poverty, violence, migration, alienation, gang life, deportation, rinse and repeat. If nothing is done to intervene on behalf of these children, he says, that same cycle will continue and continue and continue.
Our thanks to Marlon Bishop for that reporting.